There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we let's go halfway through the week. Wednesday edition of Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And if you're new around here, just follow along with the rest of us. The phone line works for phone calls and text. Same digits. 343-0106. 343-0106. Also, you can use the FM Talk 106.5 app to send us one of those talkback messages. It's a microphone icon on the front page of the app. If you press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and we can play it back here on the air. We'll talk more about the app and all that kind of stuff coming up in just a little bit. Our first guest in the... if we had a green room, they would be in the green room. We'll get to them in 1 second. I do want to say this before we go any further, because I've been listening to the news update from WKRG throughout the morning about the fire in Chickasaw there at the at Halls, right? It's the Hall Namey Packing Company on Iroquois there in Chickasaw. What's up, Chickasaw? I lived there for years. It's a bad deal. But I would say if there was any kind of place that would burn, if it had to burn, which is obviously a tragedy for this company coming up on their 80-year anniversary, the smell of that burning at a meatpacking, it would be better than other things. I would just say, I mean, I almost wish, I don't know what the way, probably had a north wind yesterday, so I probably wouldn't have smelled it at my old house in Chickasaw, but if it would have had like a southeast wind, you'd be like, yeah, something's burning. Oh, that smells like pork. It's fantastic. So that's the only the bright spot in it. All right. Without further ado, and I've been doing enough here, I bring on my buddy. He is star of the music world. Of course, the written word. You read his work in the Tennessee and elsewhere. He is musically, I didn't know, talented, but we'll talk about that coming up. Speaking of the smell of pork. Also, he is a political wonk from way back. And unfortunately for him, my friend Cameron Smith joins us now. Hey, man. There you. Oh, sorry. I had to press the right. They had the button unpressed. There we go. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. You just need salt and pepper with all that pork, and you got a barbecue. So that's a positive.
I mean, it's a. I mean, 80-year-old meat company here in Mobile, and or in Chickasaw, and that's. I mean, it's a tragedy, obviously. But I'm just thinking, if all the things that burn, you're like, you know, chemicals or this or that, delicious meats, it could be worse.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you could have a fundraiser barbecue to help rebuild. I like it.
I do too. Let's work on that. We'll buy meat to rebuild, to beat the heat. Meat to beat the heat or something like that. All right. Obviously, we've got a lot to do today. I want to kind of start off here with a story that's been talked about a whole bunch on the station, obviously around the country, and that is the Charlotte train stabbing. And it's... this stuff happens, but when it happens on video, obviously it gets a lot more attention. To me, and you know, you and I have not talked personally on this, you know, it's the matter-of-factness of it that really chills me. I mean, people, it's a bad thing, but there's violence and people get killed in heated situations and all these things. But just the, hey, I'm going to open up my knife right here and stab you to death. That, it shocks me.
Yeah, and Sean, for years I've looked at the death penalty, and, you know, I'm not a vengeance type guy.
Nor am I. I'm very slow on the death penalty. I am a slow death penalty person. Not slow death, but, like, it's got to be pretty extreme for me to say death penalty.
And so this is a case, to me, that is cut and dry, because I've actually called for a higher standard for death penalty cases, like, with absolute certainty, or so that mm-hmm. we don't play these games with like DNA evidence and stuff where we've frankly wrongfully executed people in the past.
Yep.
This is a situation where you have the individual in question, that you see what they did. It is fully recorded. There's no question whether the person in custody is the person on that video. And I just don't see a clearer case for use of the death penalty than this one, because this is what people have nightmares over.
Yes.
Not a crime of passion, but just a cold-blooded killer that says, you know what, you're minding your business sitting in front of me, and I'm going to kill you. And that's what happened.
You know, I've said yesterday, I kind of talked about it personally. You know, my eldest, so she is in school in New York. She's not in the city, but close enough, unfortunately, from her college. She goes to the city, and she tells me about riding the subways. And then she, you know, she's 19, so she knows everything. She's very smart. She can tell me all the things she does to avoid bad guys. What about a situation like this? I mean, obviously, it parents look at this. Any human looks at this and goes, "Oh my God!" But as a parent who has a kid, right, I'm like, this is just like you don't see this coming, unless you're the judicial system that let this guy off 14 times.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's anything you can't, there's no, if you've seen the video, she's sitting there, I believe, looking at her phone in the seat in front of this gentleman. He comes from behind.
Dirtbag. I'm not gonna, I know gentlemen's dirtbag on this show. This dirtbag.
He had no, like, she had no way of knowing. Like, there was no, oh, I could use mace, or I could use, no.
Correct.
Like, she was just there, stabbed, dead a few minutes later. That was how that worked.
And then the second part, man, and I watched a video up to where they had, most people paused it before the stab. I don't watch the killing videos. You know, a lot of people will watch. But then I got the recap from Dalton about after that people just sat in their seats or walked past her as she bled to death. There's the secondary, the follow-on tragedy is that we have lost our humanity. People say, well, they were worried about, you know, the guy that restrained the Marine that restrained the guy in New York, and that people don't want to get in trouble. But there's a certain point when there's somebody stabbing somebody to death that there is several people in the car that they don't bum rush them or tackle them or even lend first aid to the woman.
No. And I mean, that's a huge tragedy in and of itself, that, you know, the correct first aid response here is, hey, it looks like you got some severe puncture wounds. We need to apply pressure and call for help. Like, mm-hmm. that's stuff that, you know, is basic 101. And maybe she would have had a chance. I don't know. I don't know exactly how long it took her to bleed out. But, I mean, there was a lot of blood at the end when, you know, her body is obstructed, but you can see the amount of blood that's on the floor of the train car. And yeah, Sean, I mean, I'm very concerned for us as a nation, not just because I get it. I understand why somebody wouldn't want to go tackle the guy, but aid helped provide help to the victim.
Yes.
You know, give me something, because I see this, and I know these don't sound analogous, but the sort of calls for punishing, executing our enemies politically, just this level of viciousness that is in our culture right now. And then a lack of empathy and, frankly, a lack, just common human decency. I'm very concerned with where we're going, because thankfully most people aren't going to be murdered in cold blood on a, you know, mass transit rail car. But I can't speak to the larger social malady of we're just not taking care of each other.
No, 100%. And you're right. I mean, it's not, this is going to be, I mean, it catches attention because this is something that doesn't happen every day, but it does bring up a bigger discussion of how this person was not, you know, you could talk about mental health care facility or in jail or something, why he was out. I mean, even his family members are coming out now and saying, he needs to suffer the consequence. I don't know why he was out. You know, I mean, yeah. Even his family is like, we disavow this dude.
Yeah. And I think this type of thing, you know, this is a long time coming. It was actually one of the failures of the Reagan administration that they closed a lot of the facilities where these type of people were basically treated. I'll tell you, somebody who's lived in Washington, D.C., I've traveled on, you know, mass transit mm-hmm. regularly, and there have been times that I was fearful, that I thought we were about to go, you know, throw down because something bad was going to happen. You know, I've been eating dinner with my wife, and somebody who's very disturbed comes by and is slobbering and yelling and violent. I mean, the truth is there are some people that are so disturbed that they need help, but they can't get help wandering around the streets in a big city. And I mean, come on, 14 arrests, I think was the, you know, where we were
with
this guy.
14.
I
mean, and not for jaywalking either.
Right. And so, you know, we know something's off, and coming up with a game plan where we can say, oh, hey, look, we've seen violent behavior here. We're going to deny bail, or we're going to set bail at a reasonable threshold. I understand the folks that say incarceration can't be the answer for everything, but we're talking about violent activity. Like, if somebody shows violent propensities, like, I don't have a problem saying, hey, we're not just going to, like, slap you on the wrist and let you go. If this happens again and again and again, we've got a trend line here, and we've got to come up with a better game plan. And I do think that's what we should use incarceration for. If you cannot be safe in public and you have committed crimes, then we need you in an environment where you can be safe, and so can everybody else.
Yeah, you have proven to the rest of us that you can't be among us. You've got to go away, you know?
Right.
All right, a couple other things here before we run out of time. I did want to talk about, maybe we'll do later in the show, Vice President Kamala Harris's new book out, If I'd Done It. No, that's not the title. It's something else, but where she says she didn't see Biden's decline. but we'll maybe say that for the next time. Let's go on to this. I guess, Cameron, I'm still distracted by what President Trump has called the Epstein hoax. More motion on this. Thomas Massey, who I was a fan of, is becoming a star around this. But Trump has lost Marjorie Taylor Greene as well on this. I mean, is there the release today? Is there something going to happen on this?
My sense, Sean, is no. That, you know, the Rules Committee wanted, I believe, yesterday, scuttled a vote on the legislation. I've got to get caught up on sort of where all that is in process to force disclosure. I don't understand, Sean. The only explanation that I have is that there is something in the Epstein files that is, if not illegal, embarrassing to either the president or other people that the president holds in high regard.
I think it's number two. I do, and I have no idea. I mean, all of us, because we don't have the information, are guessing here. I don't think, you know, I think it's interesting the timeline where they came out yesterday and said, well, Trump was not an FBI informant. But obviously something happened, and it might not have just been a business deal between him and Epstein where he's like, nah, you can't come to Mar-a-Lago either, right? So, but who else in the orbit could they be protecting? Because we've said this, and this is cliched at this point, it's a bumper sticker, but if for 4 years the Dems had information like this and Trump's name was on the list, they would have gone, they run billboard campaigns with it, right? So, but it's somebody, something else. Why is this the hill to die on? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't either, Sean. I think this is a big problem because we said transparency, we have to mean transparency. And then to play this game of, well, it's a hoax or it's not a hoax. Well, we know it's not a hoax. We knew that he committed suicide in jail or was killed in jail, whatever you believe. You know, Maxwell is in prison. I mean, this is clearly not a hoax. Like, something bad happened here that was really bad. And I'm going to fall on the side of transparency here. I don't think there's an American interest that we're protecting. It seems like this is a personal interest that we're protecting. And, you know, we're talking about, I mean, we're arguing over a birthday message to Jeffrey Epstein and whether it's Trump's signature
right
or it's not. And I'm like, I don't actually care. I care. Are there things here that we need to know about in terms of corruption or potentially illegal activities by, you know, the wealthy and powerful? And that's what people, when they voted for Trump, they said, hey, he's going to take on the Washington cartel. He's going to take on the circle of the powerful, and he's going to give us transparency. The people that are in charge now, Dan Bongino, Kash Patel, were leading the charge saying, we're going to be so transparent, and then this is what we get. And unfortunately, the difficult thing for a lot of Trump voters, a lot of the MAGA folks, is, you know, this isn't what they voted for. And now they're having to sort of square the circle of, well, you said you were going to do this, and now you're telling me it's a hoax. And either they're having to say, oh, okay, I just go along with whatever you say, or they're saying, man, you really let me down.
All right. Yeah, so we'll be watching this. And the last one before we wrap up, I thought this was interesting. I think I saw you put something on Twitter about it as well. As when this news came out about the Shahed drones from Russia coming over Poland, they didn't fire. They didn't attack. So I don't know. It's not Article 5 NATO, but it's in the same neighborhood, right? I mean, if they would have fired on Poland, I mean, people need to realize that then we would all have to respond. But yes, it was as close to Article 5 kicking in as you can get, I think.
Yeah, well, Vladimir Putin is many things, but a dummy he is not.
Right.
And what I think is pretty clear from this engagement that I guess happened late last night, our time, is that he's testing that. He's testing to see what will the response be. How will people engage here? You know, is this going to cause a buildup, or is it a, well, they did, the drones violated airspace, but they didn't really blow up anything or attack anything. So, you know, maybe not. And, you know, tactically, whenever you have a military engagement, you want to probe and test and see, okay, this is one of the more secure areas. Let's see what the response is. And jets were scrambled. You know, we had all kinds of stuff going on. And Russia's taking note of that and saying, okay, here's what we might have to deal with. And this does not bode well for a peace settlement where Russia just says, okay, we're good. We're a peaceful nation that just wants to sit here. This is a probe for war.
100%. Cameron, if people want to read more of your writing and obviously check out the musical talent, and is there a clearinghouse for all of it, or just go to X? How do they find you?
Go to X at D Cameron Smith and just listen to Wasted Bacon wherever you stream your music. Go search for it. You'll be glad you did.
All right, brother. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Sean.
All right. There goes Cameron. And we're coming right back for Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Yeah, 12:25, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. We'll grab a few texts here before we get to the national news. We'll come back. Erica Thomas from 1819 News joins us. First up here, let's see. Michael said, and it's the elephant in the room as to why the three other passengers didn't help her. It's 100% a race thing. Now, Michael, I didn't pay attention. Are the other people in the train, are they black or white or something else? I mean, that's one of the parts of it that, you know, Dalton and I talked about this morning. This, because I want to get, so Fire Dog said, he's talking about the Daniel Penny effect. Okay, so that's been thrown around a bunch. It's a Daniel Penny effect. But how many people that are sitting there on the train car, I'm just seriously, just for a second, play this exercise, because I, academically, you can make that argument. Human-wise, do you sit and think, Daniel Penny, the city of New York went after him for grabbing this. I don't think people in that situation sit and run through a file in their brain. And so I think it's just we've lost our care for our fellow human out there. This is, I was saying that last night, I was talking to somebody, I said, just the way I was hollering on the air last week or the week before about the guy in Houston, right? And the kid, the 11-year-old, and I don't care if it was 11-year-old or a 41-year-old, but the person did the ding-dong ditch and then was going down the street away from the guy. Guy comes out of his house, walks down the street, shoots kid in the back. I said, I'm as 2A as they come. That's not 2A. That's not Castle Doctrine. That's not to stand your ground. This would be a case that I sure would have loved some people to be concealed carrying on there and put that dirtbag to room temperature immediately. I mean, if I'm going to dream, you got several people over there trying to stop the bleeding on this woman, and then somebody else stomping the life out of the dirtbag. Joel in Somerville says, America's turned into a bunch of weak meows. I had to edit that. I said it. I'm going to tell you straight up. There's not a lot of men or good Samaritans left in this country. Everyone's wearing freaking dresses, or they don't know if they're a man or a female bottom line, Sean.
don't know, everybody's wearing dresses. But you got to, I mean, that's the time we talk about this when we talk about Second Amendment and concealed carry things. You could defend yourself or the life of an innocent. And not that those people were required to carry guns, but it would have been nice if somebody had one or had just an amazing right hook. Let's see. This is from Mob Dog. Like I said this morning, imagine if the roles were reversed in the Arena case. I don't know if I'm saying that name right. I need to learn it. How fast the BLM movement would be out and active if Target stores would be looted. CNN was talking about it and was victimizing the dirtbag because he has mental issues, saying hurt people, hurt people. Did they say that, Mob Dog? Did they say the hurt people thing? You said absolute shame they would say that. Yeah, I'll second that. That's and it's a fail. I mean, there's so many levels of failure. The first thing is the dirtbag that murders the innocent. Okay, that's number one. That's number one through 20. Then we get to like 21 down the road. Then I'm going to blame the people that didn't assist on the train. And I'm going to, 20 is going to be the system. 20 through 30 is going to be the system. Then 31 will be the people on the train that didn't help. The system that they had a chance to get this guy. And if you look at the stories out today, I mean, his family is like, I don't know why he was out. I mean, the family members of Dirtbag saying, I don't know why he was out. It's, I'm with you. Philip asking for another meow. Maybe. I just give you one. Meow. Let's edit on the fly, right? No, Joel and Summerdale did not use the word meow, but I did because I got a federal license to keep. All right, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. And it's always good to talk to my friend Erica Thomas with 1819news.com. Howdy.
Howdy, Sean.
Okay, before we got a lot of tough news to get into, so for just a little bit of happiness here, can you give us an update? If y'all miss, we've talked to Ranger, so one of Erica's dogs, back to school. He goes to dog school. I don't know how to deal with this in my mind as old cranky dad guy, but he goes to school. It's super popular. Mm-hmm. How's he doing? Have we gotten any notes home from school? How is your dog doing at school?
Yeah, he's the teacher's favorite. I say teacher's pet, and that's hilarious. But he's doing very, very well. He gets photos back. He actually does get a report card, but we won't see that for a few weeks. he just really enjoys his time.
Gets a report card? He gets a report card.
Yes, and he always has all great marks, you know, as far as his personality, his social abilities, his ability to listen to the teacher. He minds very well. I'm very proud of him. but really, it's just doggy daycare. You know, it gets him out there. It gets him the chance to socialize with other dogs. And as a dog owner and a responsible dog owner, I think that's important. You don't want your dog to just go on the attack every time they see another dog. And a really good way to make sure they don't do that is to have them socialize and be in, you know, a safe environment, which definitely his school is very safe.
Well, it's got my attention, for sure. I would not have normally been an adopter of the dog at school, but it obviously has some legs, four legs.
Yes, Four legs.
All right. I talked in the first half hour, and heck, we've been talking a whole bunch at this station, and y'all been writing about it at 1819 News about the murder in Charlotte, and then the similar story from Auburn, a retired Auburn professor. Can you fill in the details here about the Auburn professor that was killed at a dog park, right?
Well, she was walking her dog at a city park.
Okay, somebody told me it was a dog park. Okay, so a city park, but somebody texted me yesterday, said that they they had their kids' soccer games at that park and all that in Auburn. It was like a, it's like everybody goes to it. It's not like a, you know, tough neighborhood or anything.
Yeah, Kiesel Park is the largest public park in the city of Auburn. They do have a off-leash dog area, but Dr. Julie Gardcinelli was walking her dog. They have walking trails over there. And her body was found in a wooded area of the park. She's a 59-year-old retired Auburn University professor, and she worked with the veterinary school there. And so she was just so loved, so appreciated. And the latest on that is today the family released a statement through the district attorney's office in Lee County. They were asking for privacy. They asked for media to not contact them at this time. They said they're deeply saddened by the loss of Shanelli and incredibly grateful for the outpouring of love and support the family has received. And as you know, there has been an arrest in this case. 28-year-old Harold Dabney III, originally from Montgomery, had a family history of crime. His father was a career criminal, according to court documents. He had also faced some charges, including out of Virginia Beach, where he was accused of being in possession of a sawed-off shotgun and removing serial numbers from firearms. But in that case, I don't know if the court system could have done anything to keep him off the streets, you know, for those crimes. But hopefully now he is a suspect in this stabbing death. He's accused of stealing a red Ford F-150, and we don't really know all the details. There's no motive that we know of in this case. So we'll just kind of watch to see the court proceedings and what happens, what information comes out. But this case is definitely being paralleled to that case in Charlotte. And the reason for that is we have a black suspect and a white victim and just a real lack of corporate media attention. We're talking about, you know, CNN, MSNBC, NBC, those outlets. And it's caused some outrage among a lot of conservative commentators and media outlets. You know, why are we not talking about both of these cases a little bit more and looking into the possibility of a racial motive? And in the case in Charlotte, when you see the whole video, at the end of the video, you see the suspect in that case saying, "I got that white woman."
Mm-hmm.
And so that obviously inserts a racial aspect of that case. And there are others like this that haven't gotten attention. And I don't even know if any of your listeners know about the one case that I've been looking into out of Arizona that had an Alabama man was the victim in that case.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a lot of people haven't heard about this case. This happened in April. Jacob Couch and his wife, Kristen, they lost a baby in 2024. The baby was stillborn. So in the spring this past year, they decided to take a vacation to L.A. So they were on their way back from that trip, and they were at, of all things, a bus stop in Arizona. And they were in the bus, and a man boarded the bus and kind of got into an altercation with the couple. That man has since been identified as Daniel Michael. He pulled out a hatchet and nearly decapitated this victim, Jacob Couch, right in front of his wife. He was in the hospital for several days, and he ended up succumbing to his injuries. Daniel Michael, also a black man, finally admitted he was there. He said he was drunk the night of the attack and didn't really remember anything. But the family was, you know, clearly very upset and tried to talk about this case on national news outlets, but it just didn't get the attention that they were hoping for. Now, in that case, is there a racial aspect? No one knows, but we do know that that case did not get attention. Yeah. And so it leads people to question why. This is a terrible case. A man, you know, absolutely did nothing and was hacked to death. And just, you know, crickets. Yeah. As far as corporate media.
Well, that, and to me, that's been the most chilling of all this. And I obviously don't know how it went down in Auburn or elsewhere, but we have the video from there in Charlotte. It was the, the matter of factness. I don't know how to explain it. Just the person could have still been dead and it would still be a tragedy. But if there would have been an altercation or something, it was just the, hey, I'm sitting here and now I'm going to take a knife out and stab somebody to death. Like, I don't know you from Adam's house cat and I'm just going to kill you. It makes me sick. I don't know why it worries me more than other kinds of violence, but it does.
Well, it's absolutely unprovoked and seemingly random. That guy was a repeat offender, obviously. Should he have been in jail and not been able to do that? Absolutely. Yep. Like, that should not have even been an option or an opportunity for him. And we see time and time again these violent criminals being allowed back on the streets to commit more crimes. And this is what you're going to see. This is the result of that. So, I mean, we have to take a close look at how these people are getting back out, what judges are allowing them out, plaster their faces all over the news. Let's tell people what they're doing. You know, it's important for us to stay aware here in Alabama of what judges allow this. I've done stories on judges in Jefferson County that, you know, they've allowed these suspects to be released for violent crimes. That's why we have the Nye's Law. And the Auburn suspect will undergo an Nye's Law hearing. So thankfully for that, you know, we hopefully won't see this guy back out on the streets anytime soon. Of course, innocent until proven guilty. And like I said, we don't know the details on the Auburn case enough to say, was anyone else involved? We don't know. I guarantee you that the investigators are looking at, you know, other people and making sure they're crossing all their T's and dotting all their I's, because why did this happen? Was it random? I mean, it seems to be, but we really don't know. And so we don't want to draw any conclusions on anything until we have more details come out. But what we can do is ensure that the judges in this case are making the right decisions as it moves forward.
All right, people can read more. Of course, a great story over at 1819news.com with details here and a lot more from Erica. If they want to reach out to you directly, how do they do that?
You can email me at erica.thomas@1819news.com or email the whole team at news@1819news.com.
All right, tell the dogs I said hi.
I will do.
All right, there goes Erica. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:50, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. 343-0106 gets you through. 343-0106 for a phone call, or you can send us a text there. And if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can leave us a talkback message as well through that. Do want to quickly, we'll get back to the text here, but story WKRG reporting the Mobile Town Hall confronting the deadly fentanyl crisis. So I was honored to be MC last night. They asked me again. I did the one in Sims with the Barry G. Montgomery feeder pattern, then Baker last night. And there were good information out there. And there were people, there were engaged people there and parents there. I'm going to tell y'all right now, I'm very disappointed with the turnout on that. Really am. You know, you could watch a news story. It's not going to show the crowd, but I was there. And it was poor. It was, and yes, you know, there's a AL.com story. I think we talked about it. The morning show talked about it as well. The overdose deaths in Alabama have fallen precipitously, which is a great thing, 30% since last year. How much of that is, you know, tightening on the border? How much of that is people realizing the deadliness of this, but just, I don't know. I thought more parents would be engaged in trying to find real ways to talk to the kids about this and hearing from the kids. Because I've said this on many discussions I've had on the show with people who've come in here. I said, you know, the idea that you're going to just tell the kids, don't do drugs or whatever. Don't do what you're not supposed to do. I'm sure there's some of y'all that are perfect, but were you not a teenager? Like I've said before, statute of limitations has run, so I don't think I get in trouble. I was also told by parents, you're not going to go drink beer before you're 21. Guess exactly what I did. I went and drank beer. This is a conversation I've had with my eldest. I said, so I did that. I'm not saying you should do that, but I did that. I said, but the difference was I could take a sip of that Milwaukee's Best Light, or we could shotgun the beer, right? And the worst that would ever happen is somebody would be throwing up in their parents' front yard when they were dropped off. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was at that point. Now, I understand alcohol poisoning and those things. I'm aware. But a sip of the beer wouldn't kill you. And we're dealing with stuff now that the kid that just touches something one time can be dead. Now, we have cases where people, they get addicted, and then they go to fentanyl, or it's in the drugs they think are other opioids, and those, that's a whole bunch of people. But just the acute problem of somebody takes something. I mean, we talk about the Adderall thing. Kids are colleges studying, they're taking you're like, well, they shouldn't do it. Of course they shouldn't do it, but they're going, some of them, to do it. And they can die immediately. So, so thank you. And I will continue to do these events. Whatever school districts have us out and have me out to MC these, I will continue to do it. But if you're in that area and you didn't show up last night, parents, I'm disappointed with you, for sure. All right, to the text line here. Let's see. Dun, dun, dun. David in Fairhope said, the way the process works is prosecutors recommend the bond to the judge. If there's not a defense lawyer, they are to object or argue. The judges typically could go with what the prosecutors recommend for bonds. Oh, you're talking about the case that Erica was talking about. Okay. Yeah. Another thing I'll throw into this. So just kind of look at it from a different perspective. So there's a lot made. It's black on white crime is not being reported by the news agencies, or the dirtbag in Charlotte said, I got that white woman or white girl, whatever it is. Well, that individual dirtbag needs to be room temperature as an individual. This idea that because he said that, it's the same way when people go, Al Sharpton comes out and said, I'm here speaking for the black people of the United States. I'm like, what? Did you all have a meeting and decide you're going to be speaking for all the black people? Same way as like, well, whites think. I'm like, I wasn't at the meeting what whites think. The individual that was, the people were failed by the system that didn't have this individual off the street. Right? That's a failure. And I would say, as you're looking at the stats, they rolled these out, and they are heavy. So let's talk. I mean, I'm not going to, there, let's see, it's the, where I lost it. There's some statistics rolled out here on black on white crime. Here it is. According to U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics, National Crime Victimization Study in 2021, so I guess that's the most recent we have, there were 480,030 black-on-white violent incidents reported compared to 69,850 white-on-black violent incidents. At that time, the white population in the United States was 61% compared to the black population of 12%, so showing the disproportional amount. But I would add to that something we talk about in our city all the time. My buddy John and I talk about it. You have black perpetrators of the crime. And everybody, maybe this is, I hate, this is what it takes to get people to open their eyes. You're talking about the black on white violent incident. How about the black on black violent incidents? Right? I mean, I wish we'd pay attention to it the same, no matter what the victim's skin color is. Talk about who's doing the crime. Because when we talk about things we want to do here in our city, we're trying to keep people alive. And in the majority of cases around here, it's black on black violence. So just saying, well, okay, we're going to pay attention to it now because it's black on white. Now, did mainstream media, have they continued to fail us? Of course they do. And people get worried and all gunched up by saying, like, that person's black. And, you know, if you listen to me any period of time, I'll go, black, or white. It's just your skin color. If you're looking for a suspect, news, you need to tell us what the person looks like. Right? We want to know, are they black or white? Are they short or tall? Are they fat or skinny? They got a pirate's patch overnight, whatever. You need something to describe the people. Like, that is ridiculous. When I watch that in news and people are like so worried about saying the, no, you can't deal with a problem until you identify the problem, right? But maybe this brings more attention to the fact that the violence level, I mean, you're talking about the black on white incidents, but add to that the black on black incidents into that mix. Oh, cool. People send me, David says, no, that wasn't David. It's unnamed texter said, Goodyear blimp and Theodore. Then Pat's sending me pictures of the Goodyear blimp. Hello, Goodyear blimp. I don't know where you're heading. Maybe to Auburn for the game. I don't know. So, a Goodyear blimp in town. If we had the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile in town as well, at the same time, it'd be something. If you had both of those. But the story is, like I said, there's 1 through 20. The story's about a dirtbag murderous fiend who kills a completely innocent person, not doing anything, sitting on the train. Then you got to talk about the officials that let that person, after 14 times, kept slipping through the cracks. Like, and if you read the stories out, dirtbag's family members are saying he should have been locked up. How the justice system failed, that may, it's not one time. One time you get, okay, one time, two times, maybe 14 times? And this person's out to murder that woman. But yes, is there a problem in mainstream media with what they report and don't report? Sure. I think they need to report the amount of violence that's out there. All right, 1258, coming right back, John Sharp from AL.com joins us next.